This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, summer just began last week, but the heat makes it feel like we're in the dog days of summer already. And speaking of heat, the pollsters are still taking everyone's temperature around healthcare reform. I noticed that Washington Post blogger Ezra Klein noted in his blog that the bill's popularity seems to be on the rise. He cited a USA Today Gallup poll that showed 49% of Americans now think healthcare reform is a good thing. The latest AP poll shows the same movement. The pollsters had an interesting graph showing support rising as the temperature does.
Well, I'm for one very glad it's summer, and maybe it's the summer holidays, maybe it's 4th of July weekend coming up, but there does seem to be a little bit of a lull in the health reform activity. But the trend is positive in the polls, and that's great. And what we are hearing about this week is the first real wave of implementation as states begin to enroll people with pre-existing conditions into the temporary high-risk pools. This is the group of people we heard from over and over during health reform who are being so harmed by the old policies. The web portal where consumers can shop around for affordable options launches this Thursday, July 1st. And I am proud to say here in Connecticut, we just became the first state in the country to expand Medicaid enrollment to a group that historically has been shut out of Medicaid, and that is low-income adults without young children. Under the new law, CMS estimates that 45,000 adults in Connecticut will now become eligible for public health insurance under the expansion, and that is great news.
That is great news. And speaking of CMS, it still remains rudderless. Don Berwick, who is the nominee, just can't get in front of the Senate. The Senate Finance Committee has not scheduled a hearing on Berwick as of yet. You know, he's being held up by a couple of Republican critics who just don't want to see this healthcare reform be successful. You know, the surprising thing is Berwick is supported by George Bush's former CMS administrators, as well as Gail Wilensky, who's been on this show before, along with a whole host of national healthcare associations. Let's give him a hearing. Let the public have a leader in CMS.
Well, anyone who knows Dr. Berwick's work knows that he's a real reformer, and those reforms come down solidly in improved quality, improved safety, and decreased costs through both of those measures. So we're still cheering for him and in his corner. And there is lots of work ahead. Mark, did you see the latest Commonwealth Fund report? The U.S. ranks last in overall performance compared with six other industrialized countries: Australia, Canada, Germany, the Netherlands, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom. And won't it be the true measure of how successful health reform is if that changes, not just we cover more people?
Well, I hope as the benefits of this law start to take hold, our healthcare system will move up in the ranks. As the report notes, various legislative remedies and funds will help those symptoms under healthcare reform. In any case, we still have a long way to go in improving the key elements of our healthcare system.
And speaking of legislation and legislative remedies, our guest today is Congresswoman Lois Capps, who represents California's 23rd District. Congresswoman Capps, who is also the founder and co-chair of the House Nursing Caucus, is a nurse public health advocate, and since being elected to Congress in 1998, she's made it her legislative priority to help underserved populations gain access to quality health care. We're so happy she can join us today.
And no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. You can subscribe to iTunes to get our show regularly downloaded. Or if you'd like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Before we speak with Congresswoman Capps, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, for the headline news.
This week on Conversations on Healthcare, we're interviewing Congresswoman Lois Capps. Congresswoman Capps has championed several pieces of legislation that concern access to quality, affordable health care, prevention, and increasing the number of health professionals. 1 year ago, Congresswoman Capps introduced the School-Based Health Clinic Establishment Act, which also made its way into the health care reform legislation passed in March as an authorized federal program to provide a stream of funding to support school-based health clinics, or SBHCs. Approximately 2 million American children have access to one of the 1,700 existing SBHCs in 44 states. Most of the health centers serve children who face barriers obtaining health services in their communities. School health centers provide access to comprehensive medical care, mental health, and sometimes even dental services. The Children's Aid Society operates 5 SBHCs in New York City as part of their community schools program. From the get-go, they implemented SBHCs as a foundation because they knew that healthy students learned better. Dr. Lisa Handworker is the Children's Aid Society's medical director.
A child doesn't have to leave school to see the pediatrician when they're sick. So if a child is coming in with an asthma attack, if a child is first diagnosed with asthma, we can take care of it on site and give them the medications they need to keep them in school. And then communicate with the pediatrician about how well this child is managing his or her asthma or his or her diabetes. You know, are they in good control? Are they in poor control?
SBHCs are designed to be a source of primary care, but not to replace the child's medical home. Most are staffed by nurse practitioners with support staff like outreach workers to help parents enroll their children and to maintain good communication. Many operate year-round, even when school is closed, providing a vital link to healthcare in underserved communities. And most SBHCs, like the ones the Children's Aid Society operates, provide services regardless of insurance status or ability to pay. Dr. Handworker says that SBHCs also work in partnership with the child's own primary care physician to enhance care.
To have a nurse practitioner at the school who sees that child when they're sick or who can manage the child's diabetes, for instance, on a day-to-day basis, who then can communicate with the primary care provider. As part in that communication, when you have a child who has asthma, you can work along with the child and the family because you're there where the children are. There's been numerous studies that have been done that show that school-based health centers actually prevent emergency room utilization and considerably decrease healthcare costs for children with asthma specifically.
SBHCs rely primarily on state and local funding. But with the current economic crisis and states slashing local funding, many are at risk of cutting services or worse, closing. The health reform legislation allocated $200 million in capital expenses for current SBHCs to expand their facilities or buy new equipment, but there were no funds allocated for personnel costs or direct healthcare services. Let's turn now to our interview with Congresswoman Lois Capps, a nurse, school advocate, and now United States Congresswoman and founder of the House Nursing Caucus.
Today we're speaking with California Congresswoman Lois Capps, representing California's 23rd District, a champion of nursing, supporter of healthcare reform, and an advocate for quality healthcare for the poor and underserved. Welcome, Congresswoman Capps.
It's my pleasure.
You started your career with a degree in nursing, practiced at Yale New Haven here in Connecticut, and then went on to earn degrees in divinity and education. You devoted many years to advocating for school health before going on to Congress, where you were one of only a handful of members of the House who are nurses. Could you tell us about some of the core health care initiatives that you were particularly involved with as the health reform bill was being crafted?
Oh, thank you for allowing me to talk about a subject very dear to my heart. Of course, as one of just 3 nurses in Congress, we all bring our life experiences with us. And I have been blessed to have had real opportunities to understand the challenges that many folks face, families particularly, because I worked with school-aged children and preschool families as well, where families are so concerned that they can survive and given the high cost and difficult access to health care. So reforming health care and reforming insurance and expanding health care to to cover everyone. It was a goal of mine long before for coming to Congress, actually, and long before the opportunity came to work on this legislation.
So, Congresswoman, we had the pleasure of watching you join Department of Health and Human Service Secretary Kathleen Sebelius in announcing new funds to support the education and training of more advanced practice nurses and other nurse practitioners, as well as funds to expand the number of nurse-managed health centers. And I know that you founded the first Congressional Nursing Caucus in 2003 as a forum for members of Congress to be informed and to really discuss issues that affect both the nursing community, but also affect patients who need nurses to take care of them. So we're curious about the link between the caucus and some of those innovations that we saw in the health reform bill. Did some of those ideas come directly out of the caucus?
They came out of the caucus, and the caucus was born out of my awareness and passion about involving nurses in healthcare decisions. When I was first elected in a special election, as you've referenced, the Patients' Bill of Rights was being debated on the floor. We weren't able to pass it. We almost did. And now you know there are so many elements in our health reform legislation that really have to do with a Patients' Bill of Rights. Who's speaking up for patients? Who's speaking up for consumers of healthcare, for those without it and those with difficulties accessing it? Well, it's nurses who do, because nurses provide healthcare delivery. So I knew when I was first elected that this would be a topic that would fit with my background. I also was aware early on that the shortage of nurses that we were experiencing in California was nationwide. And that led me to introduce the Nurse Reinvestment Act, and it became law. And so the need for more primary healthcare providers, because of my interest in primary care and prevention in healthcare, these important areas are offered and expanded upon by training and educating more family practice nurses, nurse practitioners, physicians assistants with particular skills in this area, and also MDs who have an interest in providing primary care.
Congresswoman, you have a broad and sophisticated understanding of public health and really understand the intersection of community practice and policy. Talk to us a little bit about what you see on the horizon in terms of public health issues that you see still needing some more cultivation and understanding by the public and by your colleagues in Washington.
We know we have challenges because the cost of health care is so high and hard to reach for so many people, but it's measured in how we access treatments that are life-saving, and we want them to be available, but we would hope that there would be behavior changes, and these changes that are needed are seen very clearly in the epidemic, which we now know as obesity. And this is an epidemic that begins in childhood. Now, to her credit, First Lady has really taken this on as an issue and brought it to the forefront of public awareness, so that a few days ago when I was in my district, I was able to be part of a program in California, at least, and I wonder if it isn't in different parts of the country, called Rethink Your Drink. And I was at a Boys and Girls Club. And here's a way of melding some federal dollars with some state resources and focusing on exercise and nutrition and making it available in summer programs like Boys and Girls Club, where kids are, they spend some time during the day, and just getting young people to understand what's in a soda.
Well, obesity has certainly grabbed everybody's attention finally, and that's a really interesting program you described. We'll follow up on that. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about another area that I don't think got as much attention within the health reform bill, and that's behavioral health, mental health, substance abuse, and parity. And I'd like to ask you, do you think that there's enough in the reform bill that addresses this issue in terms of both access and innovation? Were there things that you wanted to see that might have to wait for another day or another legislative session?
This was not a perfect bill, and of course I would like to have seen much more in the area that you talk about, because it in many ways underlies many of our healthcare needs and compounds experiences that veterans come back from service with, that we see in terms of our homeless population, that we see clogging up our emergency rooms, areas that can be addressed also in preventive and primary care ways. There are some good parts of the bill, and there are some standards that I'm very proud of. One is to include in the basic healthcare package that will roll out in 2014, all insurance companies must provide is mental health coverage. Now, this is going to be a striking change. We started it before the healthcare bill by passing, as you referenced, mental health parity, so that mental health no longer can be stigmatized by having it be way off the charts, not even considered at all, but must be considered as a health challenge, as many of our other chronic conditions are considered.
You know, one of your roles as a congresswoman is obviously a political practitioner, and the art of politics is so important in terms of communicating with the public. The polls on healthcare reform, certainly we'd like them to be going up, but what advice would you have for the president in terms of the types of communication that he needs to do, and I'm sure everyone else needs to do as well, so that we can get a better understanding and turn around any negative views that some people have about the reform bill that's been passed?
Well, you know, Mark, you put your finger on something that started very long before the bill was finally passed and signed into law, and that was the special interests that, you know, are sustained by the status quo and that have prevented us from passing legislation in earlier administrations, perhaps because the status quo is much easier to maintain. The devil you know is you know, maybe easier than the devil you don't. And so people are fearful of change, and we saw a tremendous pushback. Now we want that to change, and the best way for it to change, and the president is, has been doing the best he can, I think, under the circumstances, and we want him to do as much as he can to help us get the word out about the ingredients in the bill that are actually in place now that people can begin to take advantage of. And my colleagues and I are doing this as well, as we now break shortly for a few days in our district around the 4th of July. I will, and I know my colleagues will as well, be talking about the points in the healthcare legislation, such as being able to stay on your parents' insurance coverage until you're 26, a huge boon to those just graduating from college who thought they were going to be swamped not only with finding a job, but finding some access to health care. Now they have this cushion of time. And the donut hole recipient, you know, people who fall into that, the Medicare recipients who will now get the first installment on are beginning to close that donut hole. Things like that, and small business getting an insurance incentive to provide insurance for their employees. These ingredients that are tangible, that can be realized now, will help us take this story to negate some of the fear that still may be lingering there.
Well, let's springboard from that a little bit into, let's look at California as a bit of a reference point. We've referenced it on our show several times because of the large size and significant population of people who are both uninsured and on public insurance. And we noticed that your legislature there took action early, just recently, to implement the health insurance exchanges that are going to help individuals
yes.
buy affordable insurance, and really took control of that. So once again, California seems to be out ahead. And I guess the question would be, how is it playing out in California specifically? How is public response changing both in your district but also statewide as the state simultaneously faces just such enormous budget challenges?
Well, you see, out of the challenge that we have with our own budget comes this opportunity to take the good in the healthcare legislation and to meet it halfway, because ours is a state that will benefit so enormously under many of the provisions, because we have a large number of people living in low-income communities and with poverty needs. And so expanding Medicaid, we know it as Medi-Cal in California, to serve a wider population is a definite benefit for the state of California. And enough of these other kinds of interests that our state legislature wisely has seen as a possibility, it means that the public in California has already become attuned to the fact that this is a win-win for our state. And therefore, you see that our poll numbers, when the health care bill is still not faring so well in some areas, because of our great need, we have embraced it more quickly, and it is now a positive part of the political landscape in California. And that's a good thing. Now I'm eager that other states will see the same kind of opportunities. I don't know if their state houses will be as responsive as ours, but I know there are ways that communities can come together as hospitals reach out, you know, and work with a private practice in outcomes-based studies and so forth. There are many pilot projects in the legislation that folks are beginning to look at and seeing if they want to apply for. The communities will see some growth in the support for the legislation as communities take hold of issues.
Congresswoman, when you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
I believe keeping an eye on some model projects that spring up in Connecticut, where you're based, in communities around the country. If individuals are listening to this show of yours, this program, and want to find out what's going on, their member of Congress can put them in touch with some best practices that are already in place. We're going to be modeling the future on what's already working in communities and incentivizing communities, both professional communities and also just communities at large, to look, reach out. This is a legislation that is very creative in its scope. It doesn't mandate from the federal government, because this is a fear people have. They don't want big government telling them what they must do, but holding out a panoply, an array of opportunities that people that can take advantage of, communities can take advantage of, by banding together, by forming consortia or best practices groupings. Then there will be resources for them, and we'll see what we do best is where our local communities can make great strides forward.
Today, we've been speaking with California Congresswoman Lois Capps, supporter of healthcare reform and an advocate for quality health care for everyone. Congresswoman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
This week's bright idea comes from a Cleveland, Ohio organization called City Fresh, which is tackling obesity by improving access to healthy, affordable food in low-income neighborhoods. Like many of the country's urban areas, Cleveland is plagued by food insecurity. Many residents live in food deserts, regions where food sources are non-existent or unhealthy. For example, residents of Cuyahoga County, which includes the Cleveland metro area, travel twice as far to reach a full-service grocer than a fast food restaurant or a convenience store. This kind of food insecurity is one of the main culprits behind obesity in low-income urban areas, because when people try to maximize their caloric intake per dollar, they are much more likely to purchase cheap, processed, packaged food versus fresh, healthy fruits and vegetables, and that's where City Fresh comes in. Founded in 2005, City Fresh is a nonprofit organization with a goal of building a more just and sustainable local food system in Northeast Ohio. And much like the increasingly popular community-supported agriculture programs, City Fresh distributes weekly shares of locally grown fruits and vegetables to Fresh Stop pickup locations around the city. Unlike CSAs, though, members pay for their shares by week rather than all at once at the beginning of the season, and this makes the program accessible to people who can't pay several hundred dollars up front to join a CSA. There's two sizes of weekly City Fresh shares, $12 single shares, $24 family shares, all of which are cheaper than any of the city's grocery stores and contain more abundant amounts of fresh fruits and vegetables. One-third of City Fresh members are low-income, and they pay half price, which is completely subsidized by those paying full price. When combined with a large number of fresh stops around the city, this subsidy system makes fresh, healthy food affordable and accessible for low-income Cleveland residents. And City Fresh also works to help stimulate the local economy by purchasing all of the food it distributes from urban and rural farmers no more than 50 miles away. By making healthy food accessible to all Clevelanders, City Fresh is combating obesity, stimulating the economy, and making Cleveland a healthier and safer place to live. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.